So actually, I don't even need the book. You do, right?
I can use the text.
You do the text part. And you haven't been here before, have you, on Thursday night? I don't remember seeing you before. Well, welcome, yes. And Ruth and Cecily, I guess you gathered that. And we are slowly working our way through this text. I figure we'll be through it about 2010. Because we get very slow sometimes. We really get interested in one part. So this is a Thursday night ongoing exploration. This text is called the Majjhima Nikaya. And in English, that's translated as the Middle Length Discourses. There's a Buddha, Shakyamuni, legend has it, spent approximately 45 years after his attainment of enlightenment, walking around, especially northern India, but lots of places, India, Nepal, throughout India and Nepal, talking to different people in all different walks of life. Some of you already know this very well, but I'd like to review it for just to keep your minds fresh. So is that all right? And he spoke to people, whatever, in accord. He used words that those people could understand. In fact, in one of the sutras, I don't think it's in here, I think it's in the collected sayings, he says that when he meets with people who understand things in a particular language, he listens to their language, and then he speaks Dharma in that language. Because if something is true, it should be true. Is that adequate? So if there is a perception, language is the way we couch our conditioned views. Is that true? Language is based on our profession, on our age, on our sex, on our nationality, on our place in society. Levels and levels and levels. One of the main ones is culture, which cultural language we come from. Would you say that's true? And so all of those different states of conditioning are themselves dharma, truth, law of some type. And to make them open to a truth that takes one to liberation from suffering, therefore, should be possible. In any language, it should be possible to speak Dharma, the Dharma of liberation, Buddha Dharma. If one has thorough understanding and clear compassion. So that's a very big if. The Buddha said he could do that. To this point, I have no reason to doubt him. So his sayings, the ones that weren't too long and weren't too short, were all gathered together in one group from this 45 years of wandering around. And they are called the Middle Length Sayings, which is a really catchy title, and it explains exactly what these are. So these, most of them were given to monks, because that's most of who followed him, but not all of them. And it is possible that if you actually read all 152 talks in this book, that there will be very little about the teaching of Buddha Dharma that you do not have some grounding in, that you have not absorbed enough so that you can work with it, think about it, decide how that is true for you, or is it not? In which case, you would be doing great service to the teaching of the Buddha. So, given that little intro, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Maybe Francine would be so good as to start reading number six. That's what we're on.
Akankaya Sutta, if a bhikkhu should wish. Thus am I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Chetan Road, Anathapindika's park. There he addressed bhikkhus. Thus, bhikkhus, Venerable Sir, they replied. The Blessed One said this. Bhikkhus, dwell possessed of virtue, possessed of the Patimokkha, restrained with the restraint of the Patimokkha, perfect in conduct and resort, and seeing fear in the slightest fault, train by undertaking the training precepts. If a bhikkhu should wish, may I be dear and agreeable to my companions in the holy life, respected and esteemed by them. Let him fulfill the precepts, be devoted to internal serenity of mind, not neglect meditation, be possessed of insight, and dwell in empty thoughts.
And so, you know, of course, that if you have any question any time, you just ask the question, or if you have a comment. This formula from on this third verse, let him fulfill the precepts, be devoted to internal serenity of mind, not neglect meditation, be possessed of insight, and dwell in empty huts, is a standard. That is what the dot, dot, dot on every one of the verses up to and including verse 18, that's all that's written in at every one. You understand that? It's not written, but that's understood.
If a bhikkhu should wish, may I be one to obtain robes, alms food, resting place, and medicinal requisites. Let him fulfill the precepts, be devoted to internal serenity of mind, not neglect meditation, be possessed of insight, and dwell in empty hearts. If a bhikkhu should wish, may the services of those whose robes, homes, food, resting place, and medicinal requisites I use bring them great fruits and benefit. Let him fulfill the precept, be devoted to internal serenity of mind, not neglect meditation, be possessed of insight, and dwell in empty hearts. If a bhikkhu should wish, when my kinsmen and relatives who have passed away and died remember me with confidence in their minds, may that bring them great fruit and great benefit. Let him fulfill the precept, be devoted to internal serenity of mind, not neglect meditation, be possessed of insight, and dwell in empty hearts. If a bhikkhu should wish, may I become a conqueror of discontent and delight, and may discontent and delight not conquer me. May I abide transcending discontent and delight whenever they arise. Let him fulfill the precepts, be devoted to internal serenity of mind, not neglect meditation, be possessed of insight, and dwell in empty hearts. If a bhikkhu should wish, may I become a conqueror of fear and dread, and may fear and dread not conquer me. May I abide transcending fear and dread whenever they arise. Let him fulfill the precepts, be devoted to internal serenity of mind, not neglect meditation, be possessed of insight, and dwell in empty hearts. If a bhikkhu should wish, may I become one to obtain at will, without trouble or difficulty, the four jhanas that constitute the higher mind and provide a pleasant abiding here and now. Let him fulfill the precept.
You don't have to read them all every time, it's okay.
If a bhikkhu should wish, may I contact with the body and abide in those liberations that are peaceful and immaterial, transcending forms. Let him fulfill the precept. If a bhikkhu should wish, may I, with the destruction of three fetters, become a stream enterer, no longer subject to perdition, bound for deliverance, headed for enlightenment. Let him fulfill the precept. If a bhikkhu should wish, may I, with the destruction of three fetters and with the attenuation of lust, hate, and delusion, become a once returner, returning once to this world to make an end of suffering. Let him fulfill the precepts. Cecily, what is a once returner?
The first, there are 10 fetters, or 10 ways that we are bound to not seeing things as they are and being caught in emotional conflict. And when there is a strong development of calm, and then based on that development of calm, insight is developed in the consciousness, then the first fetter is cut through or dropped, and the first three fetters of those 10. And that experience is called stream entry. That means the conscious now has entered the stream to the deathless. When there is a second experience, then just as it says in that verse, with the destruction of the three fetters, so that's with stream entry, and then the attenuation of lust, hatred, and delusion, that means that lust, hatred, and delusion are severely cut down, that they may arise, but they don't erupt outside. Okay? So that, when that is attained, that is called a once returner. This means that being will no longer be subject to life, to being born in a body more than once. Sometimes they appear as a fetus for a short period of time and then leave. Sometimes there is actually a birth. Interesting, isn't it? The experience that one has with the adequate amount of calm and then the development of insight is called experience the transcendental state. One experience of transcendence immediately cuts through three fetters, leaving 7 to go. The second experience weakens the next 5. The third experience completely gets rid of the first 5 altogether. They are cut through immediately. And the last experience is the total destruction of all the fetters. So they are called stream entry. One has entered the stream. Once returner, there is the seeds of karma to ripen will still have the power to create one more birth. Non-returner, at the moment of death, that being will attain clear liberation from being subject to suffering. And arahat. So those are the 4 levels of cutting through the 10 fetters. Is that good?
If a bhikkhu should wish, may I, with the destruction of the 5 lower fetters, becomes you to reappear spontaneously in a pure abode, and there attain final nibbana without ever returning from that world. Let him fulfill the precepts. If a bhikkhu should wish, may I wield various kinds of supernormal power. Even being one, may I become many. Even being many, may I become one. May I appear and vanish. May I go unhindered through a wall, through an enclosure, through a mountain as though through space. May I dive in and out of the earth as though it were water. May I walk on water without sinking, as though it was earth. Seated cross-legged, may I travel in space like a bird. May my hand, with my hand, may I touch and stroke the moon and sun, so powerful and mighty. May I wield bodily mastery even as far as the Brahma world. Let him fulfill the precepts. If a bhikkhu should wish, may I, with the divine ear element, which is purified and surpasses the human, hear both kinds of sound, the divine and the human, those that are far as well as near. Let him fulfill the precepts. If a bhikkhu should wish, may I understand the minds of other beings, of other persons, even encompass them with my own mind. May I understand the mind affected by lust, as affected by lust, and the mind unaffected by lust, as unaffected by lust. May I understand the mind affected by hate, as affected by hate, and the mind unaffected by hate, as unaffected by hate. May I understand the mind affected by delusion, as affected by delusion, and the mind unaffected by delusion, as unaffected by delusion. May I understand the contracted mind as contracted, and the distracted mind as distracted. May I understand an exalted mind as exalted, and an unexalted mind as unexalted. May I understand a surpassed mind as surpassed, and an unsurpassed mind as unsurpassed. May I understand a concentrated mind as concentrated, and an unconcentrated mind as unconcentrated. May I understand a liberated mind as liberated, and an unliberated mind as unliberated. Let him fulfill the precept. If a bhikkhu should wish, may I recollect my manifold past lives, that is one birth, two births. Thus, with their aspects and their particulars, may I recollect my manifold past lives. Let him fulfill the precept. If a bhikkhu should wish, may I, with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, see beings passing away and reappearing, inferior and superior, fair and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate. May I understand how beings pass on according to directions, God's. Let him fulfill the precept. If a bhikkhu should wish, may I, by realizing for myself with direct knowledge, here and now, enter upon and abide in the deliverance of mind and deliverance by wisdom that are taintless for the destruction of the taint. Let him fulfill the precept. Be devoted to internal serenity of mind. Not neglect meditation, be possessed of insight, and dwell in empty hearts. So it was with reference to this that it was said, because, dwell possessed of virtue, possessed of the patimokkha, restrained with the restraint of the patimokkha, perfect in conduct and resort, and seeing fear in the slightest fault, trained by undertaking the training precepts. That is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words.
Karen, any questions?
What does he mean by seeing fear in the slightest fault?
me is that one should come to a point of understanding the dreadfulness of being caught by ignorance and desire. One should fear that to such a degree that if there is the slightest fault, one immediately says, no, I don't think I'll go there. Or I know I'm not going there. What it really means is the more you do keep your word, which is, I suppose, from my point of view, that's what keeping the precepts is, keeping your word. The more you do keep your word and honor the fact that you're keeping your word, practice calmness of mind, practice being willing, what would be the right word? Patience, humility, understanding that everyone is as powerfully alive as you are. I would say that would be my definition of patience. Understanding that whatever it is that's driving me to pass that car is probably driving that driver and driving the car behind me and driving the deer and driving the fly. You know, that the intensity of livingness within my skin is no greater than the intensity of livingness without my skin. And so then that opens the eyes a little more. Is that okay for? So that's what creates the ability to be calm, patience, because then one can examine one's own desires and what one does have. If you're present in your own livingness and you don't treat the outer world as if it were full of objects. Am I making sense? I don't think I am. There's a sort of a... I am?
Yes.
Congratulations to me. So devoted to internal serenity of mind would be to have that sense that whatever is arising in you is not unique to you. Or in other words, patience. And the Artisha says, the greatest statement of patience is humility. Isn't that beautiful? Not groveling. I remember being at an initiation in Wangkor not so long ago by a wonderful being whose clear presentation of mind only was so direct and so transparent that it brought joy to everyone in the arena. And at this particular initiation, there was one person who felt this person was wearing robes and also felt that they weren't going to be recognized, or because they were from a different area than the monks who were traveling. And so whenever there was some part of the initiation, he pushed his way up and was not people over, I mean actually did. You could feel his energy. And I watched myself. Oh, that guy. I mean, he's just a little... I mean, he's just not very spiritual at all. You know, here I am, right? No. But not so. What happened was all the other monks, all of a sudden, they made a point of making sure he went first. And the calm that came over him. And the enjoyment of the energy that spread from that. That was the clearest I have ever seen. Isn't that interesting? Patience, humility. Isn't that interesting? Why? Because it opens the joy. It opens the heart. Doesn't it? You feel that hunger and you look around and see who else is feeling it. Oh, hi. You too, huh? Oh, go ahead, I can wait. My pleasure. Because it is. Isn't it? Because it is. Who is hungriest, feed them first. Right? So that would be serenity of mind, wouldn't it? I mean, when I sat there, you know, after about the third time I watched this guy, this was not serenity of mind. And I could feel it, and I didn't like it. So I'm sitting there watching myself. And these monks, just all of them, they just gave this beautiful teaching. Not a word was said. And immediately, this, you know, the joy just erased all. Garbage. Performance anxiety. So that would be serenity of mind. Humility. Not neglect meditation. Some of us tend to talk about it a lot, don't we? Would you say? Mm-hmm. But meditation is food for you. Not neglect to feed within. Keep it balanced. A lot of energy is going out. Don't neglect to feed within. You have two faces, right? The inner face, the outer face, don't you? It doesn't say you must do 52 hours every 3 minutes. It's not asking for the impossible. It says not neglect meditation. Because meditation is feed for yourself.
How is it food for you? I know that. I understand that when I do it, I feel so much better. But how is it?
Because just for a moment, one is not caught in becoming.
In becoming?
Becoming. If there is a sin in Buddhism, it would be becoming.
Becoming is what?
Whatever it is you're reaching for.
Oh, okay.
We all have desire, we all have talent, we all have, there is a push, a thrust that has brought all of us into this world. At least one each. Probably several. You don't have to keep restating that, it's already pushing. Isn't that good news?
Mm-hmm.
Your whole being is that expression. That's like just good news. I think that's good news. So, but what you do need to do is pay attention to what else there is in your being other than what you want, other than the eight worldly ideals. You do need to try to find the point from which all that desire comes. That's what meditation does. It feeds that part of oneself which in Buddhism is called wisdom. Meditation is wisdom food. So with wisdom, there's less trying to grasp after anything that glitters and more sitting back and waiting for the real gold. So you want to feed that part of yourself that recognizes gold, rather than going for every little piece of glitz. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Or rather than working really hard, you know, some people do that. You've done that, you know. A lot of people do that. They put out enormous energy for 3 cents. But right livelihood means you get the most for the least. Not the least for the most. And you learn how to do that through meditation. By calling on the door of wisdom inside. By not going out with your senses all the time. You have to balance. Go in, go out. You have to do both. Don't you? I haven't spent a lot of time in monasteries. Just a couple of years. Which is probably a couple of years more than most of you in this room. Would you say that's true? So out of a poor lot, I'm the expert. Out of these scrapings. And I have only lived in for any reasonable period of time 5 monasteries, and there's an awful lot more than 5 monasteries in the world, you know. So my experience of monasteries itself is slim pickings, who's a famous country and western singer, I think he may have heard of him, Slim Pickens. But in a monastery you can find people who do a lot of meditation, but they're not meditating at all. They're either practicing not feeling, or practicing imagining how spiritual they are because they're doing all the meditation. All I'm trying to say to you is it isn't whether you sit or whether you're in the world. What matters is that you spend a certain amount of time feeding wisdom. The number one way to feed wisdom is through meditation. And it's different, isn't it? When you actually start paying attention to the meditation and doing it, the same meditation over and over and over and over, it is not the same meditation. Every time you enter it, it's a whole new ground. If you actually do it, isn't it? Some of you know this. First, it's the same meditation because you're just doing it because you're going to get somewhere. After a while, that's not what's happening, is it?
No.
And then your world view changes, doesn't it? The more you do the meditation, the more calm you have in the world, right? The more you see where you can take a break, sit back and won't smell the flowers, whatever, you know? Don't you?
No.
I do. There's that beautiful Zen saying, if I don't meditate for one day, what is it?
I notice.
Well, if I don't meditate for 2 days?
My enemies notice.
If I don't meditate for 3 days?
My friends notice.
No, everybody notices. Number 2 is definitely enemies. Because they're really watching. They're almost as sharp as you.
I notice.
If I don't meditate for 1 day, I notice.
I notice. If I don't meditate for 2 days,
my enemies notice. If I don't meditate for 3 days,
everybody
notices.
No.
They might not know it's meditation, but they notice.
Yeah,
jeez, you're really got up on the wrong side of the bed today, didn't you? No, I just didn't meditate. Why? What's your problem?
When I used to work at massage, the manager used to say that to me. He said, I really like it when you're doing your meditation. He says, you're just different. And the last, very last person in the world I would expect to hear that from was him.
Mm-hmm. It's very noticeable. Yeah. It really is. And that's what feeding. You're feeding some aspect of yourself that you don't usually identify as yourself. Because usually we identify that part of ourself with that which goes out and gets awards, you know. Don't we? So this is an aspect of ourself that supports that one. So it doesn't have to scramble around in the mud so much. So where did we get to here? Internal serenity of mind, not neglect meditation. Be possessed of insight. What does insight mean? You didn't have any questions, so I get to ask you questions. What does insight mean?
Didn't you know I would ask you?
What does insight mean?
Seeing things as they are.
Pardon?
Seeing things as they are.
One more time?
Seeing things as they are.
Yeah. Seeing things as they are. Seeing clearly into things. That's the more barest description of insight. Seeing things as they are. This means you can also see the cause and effect. You can see the cause for something to be as it is, if you can see it as it is. Can't you? Mm-hmm. So that is to say, you don't see things when you have insight. Insight is actually not seeing things as they are, because when you're looking with insight, you see conditions dependent on this. This is arising. Is that true? When you don't have insight, you see things. You are doing that. When you have insight, you see clearly, oh, this is a mind of pain in front of me. And if you pay more attention, you can feel what kind of pain or why. Is that clear? Oh, this is a mind of joy. So, in the most Buddhist definition of insight, insight is anicca, dukkha, anatta. Nibbana. Seeing the impermanence, the dissatisfactoriness, the no inherent self, and the peacefulness inherent in all existence.
Peacefulness
inherent in all inherent existence. And dwell in empty huts. Isn't that good? So you remember, you know what that's from. Remember fear and dread? Before blemishes, blemishes? Wasn't fear and dread before blemishes? Number four, fear and dread? They sound like breakfast cereals, don't they?
It's certainly not one I would buy.
Fear and dread?
Can I maybe get you to do a slight review of fear and dread? It's an important issue for me. Also, I have a question that has to go back to the whole idea of insight. Because one of the things I've been...
Can everybody hear, Brenda?
Sorry. One of the things that I've been kind of struggling with is the idea, is a process a thing? Or is it just a transformation, and I don't know if I'm making my question clear or not.
No, it's very clear.
Yeah. And then if you can see process, and you say that with insight you see things as they are, and that it's this whole idea of
process.
Yeah. And that process to you just is transformation from one state to another.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get lost in the words sometimes.
I remember, and I've mentioned this before, I remember that after grade 7, when I had a really great chemistry teacher and I got all excited, then I went to sleep again until grade 9, when another science teacher stood at the blackboard, and it was probably about a third of the way through this classroom, and I had pretty well perfected picking up just the words that you needed to get a just like 49.75% or something, you know, just skim through. Without, don't make waves was my policy for school. And I could sit there with a semi-intelligent look on my face, looking at somebody's lips moving, but not actually, only tune in to every once in a while. But the jolt that went through me when the science teacher in grade 9 said, matter is neither created nor destroyed, it simply changes from one form to the other, and I can still hear his voice. It was like somebody had turned all the lights on. I was electrified. Out of nowhere. You know, I'm going da-dum, da-dum, da-dum. Suddenly, I'm like watching every word he's saying, and I feel this excitement from that. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And isn't that exactly what you're talking about?
It's exactly what I'm talking about, but then, because I've studied so much Taoism, and they talk about the balance between yin and yang, and then there's also the idea that somehow when you talk about energy and then you talk about matter, that they can be categorized as, say, energy would be a yang descriptor, whereas yin would be matter would be a yin descriptor. And then when you try to apply those concepts to Buddhism, and maybe this is not appropriate, but I just do this anyways. If you say that there is no thing, then...
There is no inherent thing.
Okay, then that's enough. Then I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can do that. Also, could I also ask you to do a little review of
Fear and Dread?
Because mm-hmm. that is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Just a short one.
I'll just finish her question first, Morris. So, in the Sutra on Fear and Dread, the Buddha is talking about how he worked with fear and dread when it arose. And the first thing he did was is similar. It's almost the same formula as here. Someone comes to him and they say, when clansmen have gone forth from the home life into the homelessness out of faith in Master Gotama, do they have Master Gotama for their leader, their helper, and their guide? And do these people follow the example? And the Buddha answers, that is so, Brahman. And then the Brahmin said, but Master Gotama, remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest are hard to endure. Can you imagine that? Seclusion is hard to practice. It's hard to enjoy solitude in the middle of a forest, jungle, tiger. One would think the jungles must rob a bhikkhu of his mind if he has no concentration. So fear and dread are the first thing that you learn. And this is very... beautiful. Very beautiful sutra. And it is basically the shadow of this sutra. They're basically talking about the same thing. That you can't have concentration unless you have a sense of confidence. You can't have confidence unless you have a sense of morality, of goodness. You can't have goodness unless you follow, you keep your word. You can't keep your word if you're trying to get away with something. So it starts the same thing. Follow the precepts. Keep your word. The whole basis of what this sutra that we're speaking about now is going through is going through how to develop what are called in Buddhism the eight understandings or the eight knowledges of a Buddha. You know, I've told you before this too, you know, I keep repeating myself. In the lotus in the Tibetan tradition that a deity is going to appear on, there are animals holding up the throne that the lotus is on. If it's a lion, then that's the family of Akshobhya. If it's an elephant, then that's the family of Virochana, etc., etc., etc. You know all this stuff? Well, it's true.
Okay.
If it's peacock, it's... watch me. You were naughty. Come on. Amitabha. And then there are these eight elephants. They are the eight bodhisattvas. What are the eight bodhisattvas, you ask? Don't you?
What are the eight bodhisattvas?
What are the eight bodhisattvas? First one is called knowledge of supernormal powers. That is to say, knowing that life is not only living by bread. Like Jesus said, you cannot live by bread alone. Right? It's got to be more than bread. That material world is only half the story. Knowledge of supernormal powers. And you know that because there is experience of it. Clear, definite experience which you accept. There are two levels of experience. One is called knowledge and one is called understanding. Knowledge is when you're there, when you have an experience of something. Understanding is when you understand how that knowledge comes into being. You know the path to that knowledge. Knowledge is when you have an experience and you know you have it, and from that point on you believe. Because this is how these dharmas, these laws are operative. See, that's understanding. Is that clear? You see the difference between those two? So the first of the bodhisattvas is called knowledge of supernormal powers. And this isn't just on good days. This is like, yes, I do know that. This is an experience of supernormal power that actually has made your psyche understand that the spiritual world is extremely important. And you don't look for others to prove that you should believe. You don't look for support in your belief. Just in your being, you know that's true. And your heart is clear on that. That's the first one. The second one is called the divine ear. And you can see that that is what he's talking about in verse 15 of what we talked about tonight. There's 15 of the Six Sutra, divine ear, right? He is talking about these eight, which the Tibetan use as the eight animals that hold up a lotus on a throne. Got that? So this is, that comes, as does all the Tibetan teaching that I am familiar with, directly from the teaching of the Buddha. And you will find in many different ways the reference to these things, just as the same material is covered in fear and dread as is covered here. So we can go back to fear and dread, or we can look at it here. It's going to be the same formula. So knowledge of supernormal powers, then the divine ear, that is therefore understanding thingness rather than thing. Hearing the vibration of things deeper than sound. Understanding the movement of things. Then comes penetration of minds. We just talked about divine ear. Which verse was that? 15. And then penetration of minds is 16. Right? That's the next one in the laundry list of the supernormal understanding of a Buddha, the stages that are developed and that become Buddha. And these are the bodhisattvas, the bodhisattvas, right? Penetration of minds means that you actually have that experience that I was talking to you about with humility, where the beings you meet, their livingness is at least as intense as your own. Is as intense as your own. Not at least. Is. Where there is that kind of, the mind has the clarity of a mirror. So, there is no problem. That's not, the penetration is not even the right word. The minds are always interpenetrating. Maybe perception, but not perception either.
Are there variations?
Direct knowing of minds would probably be the best.
Are there variations in levels of intensity, or is it just differences in ways of expression?
You mean of different beings?
Yeah, like to get back to number 16 when you talk about this, because you self-corrected.
You mean like whether everybody, all beings desire pleasure, says the Dalai Lama. Mm-hmm. All beings seek happiness. Mm-hmm. And that's as intense in every being as it is for me in me.
Okay.
That's what you're asking.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
So the level of intensity is the same, it's just differences in expression. Because
I'm not going there.
Oh, okay.
Don't you want to know why I'm not going there?
Yeah.
Because the question seems to have two different levels that you're asking it on, and it would be too confusing. It would take us too off track.
Okay, well...
So,
I have to admit I'm not entirely clear what I'm even asking.
I hear you asking one thing and another thing, and I don't necessarily connect the two of them, and I'm not sure you do either, but it's certainly either one of them would take us off track.
Okay.
So I'm not going there.
Okay.
Yeah. So where are we? Okay. Penetration of mind. So then the next one that's listed in the laundry list of Buddhism... is recollection of past life, of once, of this continuum. So now, penetration of minds means that having established knowledge of supernormal powers, and so therefore knowing that the material world is not the whole story, then going deeper and deeper into that, and then hearing truth. For example, when I was driving here, I went on the road through Olds, and then I came over on 2A, and then I came over to 2 from Olds. And I'm coming around the corner there, and I'm looking ahead because I'm hearing that it is a good time to practice awareness for the, it, because there is so much confusion with so many people. I haven't heard this at all, really, particularly on the drive uptown. And I'm just thinking that. And as I come around and I look, and there's a group of 5 cars coming together, and I say, and I think, oh yes, there, because I can hear it. Does that make sense to you? So then I pull in to the merge lane, but then for some reason I decide to ignore what I had heard and be an I. And one of the cars, there's like a very short cut off, cut on, because it's one overpass, it's not a very often used overpass, so one clover comes around this way and the other one goes up this way. And this guy is trying to maintain his speed and go off on the off ramp. And I don't see his signal. Maybe he had his signal on, but I didn't see it. And I'm trying to merge in. What is this? What I'm talking to you about? What am I talking to you about? I'm talking to you about penetration of minds. Because my consciousness was too occupied with whether or not I was going to becoming, make the appointment here, do the practice I wanted to do this morning, get to the hospital, go and see ta-da-da-da-da, drive to Edmonton, have a shower, and be time to give the class in a proper state of mind. Although I am involved in the divine ear, I'm hearing that there is an energy coming, and I see it, and I clearly identify it, then I decide that I'm going to go this way anyway. Okay? In other words, I forget knowledge of supernormal powers. And I drop out of bodhisattvahood like that. Of course, none of you have this experience, which is why I'm wondering why I'm sitting here and you're all sitting there. Because I think all of you should be sitting here. Oh, that's how it is. All right, thank you. I'm not sure how clear I'm being here. Are you getting it?
Yes.
These 8 moments, which are the list, and this, if a bhikkhu should wish, sutra, are occurring all the time. Do you know what you want to be focusing on? That's the question. And he goes through a list of all the things that any human being would want, right? Don't all beings wish to be dear and agreeable, mm-hmm. respected and esteemed? Mm-hmm. Don't they wish to have all the necessary physical support? Don't all beings wish to have all the necessary physical support? Don't they wish that they could have to see all the beings who support them prosper and do well? Don't all beings wish that whatever circumstances arise, that they have the power to bring solace to those they love? Huh? Isn't this true? These are all basic things that everybody wants. So the whole formula here is this. If you have developed an ability to follow the precepts, keep your word. If you then calm the mind, through a sense of confidence that you are keeping your word and practicing kindness so that you find yourself trustworthy in any circumstances. And then you then your mind is calmed. If you then feed the wisdom aspect of your being, if you then move away from activities that take you out of concentration and insight into a hut, right? Where those two are combined, the hut. Concentration and insight are combined in a hut. They have to be, or you leave the hut. If those things have occurred, then automatically by all of these wishes will be fulfilled. But not only them, knowledge of supernormal powers will be fulfilled. Will be fulfilled. Knowledge, not coming and going, but more and more firmly. I tell a lot of driving stories on myself, don't I? Because in driving is when I am the weakest. In driving, I can see most clearly how the mind falls out of these states. So therefore, I can see these states, how they arise and how they dissolve. When I'm in, you know, sitting in front of my shrine, hey, just fine. But in driving is when it's very clear to me. This is this state. This is how it arises. This is how it dissolves. Right? So having established all these eight worldly ideals, then now comes the eight bodhisattvas in this sutra. That's what he's saying. Okay, you got love. You got pleasantness. You got power. You got material resources. Right? Do you understand? So then, and so here comes, and you got then the mental powers of meditation, right? Insight and so forth, but we're going to get to that. So then you develop knowledge of supernormal powers, you develop the divine ear, you develop penetration of mind. One automatically follows the other. When there is the divine ear, then penetration of mind is very, it is what flowers from the divine ear, because someone hears. You don't try to. You hear, oh, there's a vibration moving up the highway here. You don't try to, any more than you try to look at this room and notice that there's a doorknob, you know? You're not looking for a doorknob or going to get the goods on doorknobs now. As part of the landscape, it's the way of being present. It's nothing unusual when you experience it. Is that clear? I just want to make sure you really understand that these things just build on each other. As one becomes more present, based in the present moment, the powers of being a human become more clear. Power does not mean bombing. Power means being. I was telling a friend not long ago that one of my favorite verses in the Old Testament of the Christian Judaic Bible is, and God looked at his creation and, do you know this one? Found it what?
Good.
Isn't that beautiful? And I really think that meditation is learning to return the favor. Really. deeper and deeper and deeper, find a deeper and deeper level of good. So you don't have to be so busy, right? So then, after the knowledge of penetration of minds, then comes knowledge of past lives, which again is like just following cause and effect then within one's own being. Your inner circumstances, conditions arise, you find this conditioned reaction comes up, and you just question it, you just look at it, and all of a sudden these flashes come very clear. Pa-doing, pa-doing, pa-doing. You know, if you're really crude and, you know, not a very good meditator, at first they come up, there's lots of crying and wailing, you know, and once it's life and you know, thrash around, you should have seen me. I look like something that the Exorcist film crew had left behind, you know, the body's going all over. But, you know, eventually you get a little more dignity and it's just like the littlest twinge in consciousness and boom, oh yeah, boom, 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 right. Wonderful. And so then, once that can be done here, then of course it extends out when you see someone else. Extends out not just in the past, but you can actually follow beings' minds because there's no experience here that you've closed yourself to. Then you can pray for someone and feel their consciousness and, you know, perceive them dissolving and reappearing. That death rebirth. I can do that for a little over a week now after someone has died. When they come to consciousness after they've died. I can follow them for about the first transformation. And after that, I haven't wanted to, you know. I haven't paid attention. I go make myself another cup of tea. That's what I do at that point. And that is not something I have tried to do. Do you understand? That's arising based on a foundation. What foundation? The precious human birth. Being here. These aren't something you get. These are something you have. Are you using them? Why? If you're not, probably you're using out here too much and not doing enough meditation to balance out here. You don't have to balance it exactly.
I worked 8 hours, I gotta sit 8 hours. You kids feed yourself.
No. I mean, if you want to try that, it might work. I recommend it. I mean, I don't want to take any way you can do that out, you know. But don't believe it yourself. So penetration, knowledge of passing away and reappearance of beings, that's in here too, isn't it? That's number 18. They have some of these slightly in reverse order. And then number 19 is destruction of cankers?
Yep. Destruction of taints.
Yeah, cankers. In the way I was taught, the eight powers of the awakening culminating in Buddhahood. It's the destruction of cankers, knowledge of the destruction of cankers.
Here they use destruction of taints.
Yeah.
Cankers and taints are not exactly the same.
Oh, they're close. The word is very hard to translate. Let's see if they give us the word here. Let's see the footnotes.
Check
it out. Is this interesting to you?
Yes.
Yes.
This is great.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't say what they're translating as taints at all. If it's and I think it yeah. I will have to check that. I'll see how I can find that. I have this in Pali, and I'll plow my way through. Let's see if we can find it. Okay. The knowledge of construction of and destruction of the cankers arises immediately upon letting go of subject-object. Does that make sense to you? It doesn't? What did I say? Repeat it.
Subject-object.
Repeat what I said.
Destruction.
I didn't. I said knowledge of.
Knowledge
of destruction.
Taints.
Oh, no, I didn't. I said cankers.
Cankers.
So you see? Isn't that interesting? Don't you think that's interesting?
You can talk to me. You just say yes, so you hope I go look at somebody else.
That's not keeping your word, is it?
No.
What's more important? Knowledge of the construction of cankers is not the same thing as knowledge as the destruction of cankers. Knowledge of the destruction of cankers. Then immediately leads to insight. Because knowledge of the destruction of cankers is a thorough penetration of the illusion of subject-object. Thorough penetration of the illusion of subject-object. I have a text that says, to start it, it says, the impure vision of subject and object dissolves into emptiness. It's got to be my favorite teaching just for that. Just for that. Actually believing in subject-object stops one from knowledge of supernormal powers. So even though one's whole being is existing and one is supported and sung into being and held and confirmed by supernormal powers, one is busily running around cleaning the sewers, pretending that there is. That is the whole function of one's life. Isn't that curious? Maybe you like it better the way the Buddha said it. I have good news for you, O ye who toil and sweat in the bonds of a cruel master. Your cruel master doesn't exist. Do you like that way of saying it? Subject, object.
Okay.
Subject, object.
Okay.
The impure vision of subject, object, because there is no inherent position or possession, there is no inherent position or possession, there is a dancing, coming into being, existing, and passing away. There is thinging, there is no inherent thing. You do exist, I do exist, whoops! Oh, you do exist, I do exist, whoops! Oh, you do exist. What was it? Where's the candles? Candle burning. The Buddha takes another candle, lights it for him on that. He's got two candles. He says, which is the right flame? Will the real flame please stand up? What is the identity of this? If you take away the wax, is it still a flame? If you take away the wick, is it still a flame? Penetration of the illusion of subject-object. Why do you have to polish the sewers? Why can't you rest in the knowledge of supernormal powers? As long as you have to do, you are subject to becoming a murderer. How's that for sweet? Doesn't that just excite you? One of your number one career choices, isn't it? Not. Becoming a lunatic, becoming a ghost, becoming a philanthropist, becoming a bodhisattva, becoming a saint. Becoming a. Not choosing. So long as there is being subject to becoming, there is the illusion of subject-object as inherent. And an ignoring of the gaps of that existence, of that subject and that object. Ignoring the gaps altogether. Ignoring the knowledge of supernormal powers. So this whole list goes through from the most ordinary thing, wishing to be loved, to full attainment of enlightenment. And what is it that does all of these things, from just making your neighbors like you to attaining full enlightenment, keeping your word? What is the list? Why don't we read it together? Let him fulfill the precepts. You see it there? Anyone? 19 or number 3? I can't hear you.
Number 3.
Let him fulfill. I still can't hear you.
Let him fulfill the precepts.
Be devoted to internal serenity of mind. Not neglect meditation. Be possessed of insight and dwell in empty hearts. Period. What other practice is it? Now, each of those can be explored in greater depth. And whatever is arising, if fear is arising, at some level of fear, the first thing you do is you check. You say, am I still in my body? Right? Am I present? Because the key to concentration and morality is being present. Bringing the mind, let go of the past, let go of the future. The first two offering bowls on the shrine, right? Water for drinking, to cut down the thirst that is always dragging you into the future. First bowl you offer, cut down the thirst, let go of the future. Just for a moment, let go of the future. It'll come up again. You'll get it, it's okay. I guarantee it will come and knock on your door. You don't have to keep it so tight. Second one, water for washing the feet, removing the dust of the past, the path you have walked. Let go. And sometimes they're combined together, and so you say the offerings that circle about an ocean of hearing. The key to hearing is to be present. That's why I'm picking on. I'm picking on you. The key to hearing is to be present. You're not respecting yourself if you're not present. That's the most painful thing about it. If you're present, then all the other powers will arise. An ocean of hearing. Isn't that beautiful? Water for drinking, water for washing. An ocean of hearing. When you hear, then that which is heard and the hearer become a force greater than either one on their own. But you all know that, don't you? Everybody, we all know that, don't we? Because we have all been listened to and we have all heard, haven't we? Where everything becomes silent because we hear. We know the power of that. Why are we looking for that in the future? Why are we looking for that in the past? Because we know it's in the present. Why? Why, when we know something, do we keep cleaning the sewers? Why? Now that's a really interesting question. Don't you think? Do you have any questions, answers, comments, and complaints?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
So what happened in, you know, when you're driving and all that?
I learned a great deal. I learned. I paid attention. And I was thankful. And I thanked that person driving the other car. And I thanked the Buddha. And I thanked all the beings who are suffering in ignorance along with me. And I wish that for the sake of all beings that this ripen and be used for the downgoing of suffering. Because it was very clear. It was like one of those really clear ones, you know? They do happen when I'm driving, because it is my worst time. I swear, you know, out of compassion someday, somebody is going to hire me as chauffeur. Just to get me off the road. I'm a good driver, but man, the mind states. But it's good training, you know. It's like Dante going through Inferno, you know. And then I have my mama, you know, that my mama's voice, you know. If somebody's not going fast enough, I find myself saying, as she used to do, because my mother used to drive a taxi. And she used to say when she was driving somewhere and somebody was going really slow and she was trying to, you know, get somewhere, she'd say, "Take it with you, dear." So I find myself doing all those ones. "Take it with you, dear." Not drinking the water. And I catch myself not drinking water. I say, where do I have to go? What is the present moment? I have to go to here. Isn't that a great title of that book? How do I get here from there? Isn't that great? I think that's great, eh? Because we're always busy being there. How do I get here from there? Isn't that a beautiful title?
You said that if you stop a man in Vermont, ask him where you're going to Boston. Mm-hmm. You know, Boston's 50 miles away, but you can't get that from here.
You're looking very well. It's lovely to see you. Morris.
Wow, lovely.
Oh, yeah, it's lovely to see you.
Well, you're lovely to see you.
Yeah, it's been a long time, I feel like. I haven't seen anybody for a long time. So, how are we doing? Questions, answers, comments, and complaints? It's almost tea time. You got 3 minutes here.
The laundry list. We don't got to...
Didn't we do insight, destruction of cankers, insight? Oh, yes, sorry, I didn't mention the last one. Supernormal power of the mind made body, which he talks about being, you know, that's he talks about after he talks about the concentrations. In this sutra, he talks about the jhanas, and then he talks about diving into the earth and diving out of it, and blah, 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 blah. Supernormal power of the mind-made body. Understanding that the body is made by consciousness. Dancing with the elements. Understanding that no longer conditioned by dissatisfactoriness from the past, by greed, hatred, and delusion. Having cut through cankers, then there is supernormal power of the mind-made body. One is no longer subject to rebirth. That's what that means. Then there is a clear statement of the Bodhisattva vow. For the benefit of all beings, I will return. So then you can leave a little note saying, well, I think I'll appear on the third mountain range over to the left in a village there. There's a young couple courting there. I really like the energy that they, you know, the mind resigned. Yeah, look for me there and about, oh, give me, come on guys, give me 6 years. Probably have the name. Their name will be. No problem. Supernormal power of the mind-made body. And that's a choice, no longer subject to rebirth. My sweet mama said to me one day, you know, dear, I feel like the only thing I've done in my life is be born. Ever since then, I've been reacting. No longer subject to birth. Imagine if you could make a plan and it all happened. Now, wouldn't that just blow your mind? But it would. It would totally blow your mind. Spaciousness. Yeah.
Not subject to rebirth, meaning that you don't have to be reborn.
This is a delicious question. And this is basically a definition of Theravada versus Svajrayana, Mahayana, your question here. Because arahat is the aim in the Theravada tradition. That means no longer subject to rebirth. Period. In the Mahayana tradition, Bodhisattva is the aim. That's where you have the experience of arahat, and then you clearly make the decision. You aim at coming back until all beings are liberated. And it's right from this point that's done.
So
it's figured that you're just finish this. It's figured that you're probably not going to make that decision when you're blissed out in arahatship. So what they do is they force and coerce and offer you, 50,000 wonderful blessings if you make the vow now and do it every day. So you build it in as a habit. And then by the time when it's actually a possibility, there's already a leaning that way.
You're being bribed.
Absolutely. I mean, there is no question about, if conditioning is so strong, why not use it? If conditioning is such a powerful instrument, why not use it for the liberation from suffering for all beings? Mm-hmm. And furthermore, why not get willing participation? Because you notice most of the time in your little meditation room, nobody there but you. And sometimes that's the problem. You have to get the whip away from you. Isn't it? Get you in there and you're whack, how whack. Some of you actually enjoy your meditation now. So who had another question? You did, Wayne?
Well, I think you answered it, but just the decision. The Arhat actually makes a decision not to come back.
No, it doesn't make a decision not to come back. He has made the decision to be free, liberated from suffering.
Okay.
So that's what he's done. It's called self-liberated. It's called liberated. It's like... But in the teaching of the Buddha, there is anicca, dukkha, anatta, nibbana, and paññatti, which means knowledge of all coming into being and passing away, which is the one thing that an arahat does not have. It's the universal mind, that universal consciousness that can see all coming into being and passing away, and that's one of the things Buddha has, and that's one of the aspirations. That's one of the aspirations of Bodhisattva. Liberate all beings means see all coming into beings and passing away, right through to liberation. So when you see in refuge prayers, for example, I take refuge in the essence, in the Buddha, in the Guru, or in Vajradhara, who is the essence of the qualities and deeds, of the body, voice, and mind, of all the Tathagatas abiding in the 10 directions and the 3 times. We're talking universal mind right there, you know that, don't you? Which contains the 5 Buddha wisdoms, right? You know that right there, right? Is that clear? Source of the 84,000 articles of the doctrine, paññatti. That's like the wisdom of all coming into being and passing away, every possible course to enlightenment. A master of the Noble Assembly. But that's enough. Isn't it? So, I appreciate all of you being here, and we feel a gold light in your hearts. And you have it spread out from your body. It spreads through your whole body, just nice. And of course, you're not closing your eyes, because even though I haven't been here for a while, you know how I detest that. I'll come up and bite you and earn 50,000 more lifetimes in hell, and then that would be terrible because you'll miss me. So this gold light spreads through your body and it pours out your pores in all directions, above, below, in front, behind, right, left, four quarters. Moves out through the whole world. Wherever there is ignorance, where there is suffering due to ignorance of body, ignorance of speech, or ignorance of mind. Just think that it's temporarily assuaged. There is a moment of clarity, of peacefulness for all beings. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there's no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there's no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there's no suffering. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you.
Professor, can you make an announcement?